The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Vision News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources, and the first one up is from the NFB at nfb.org. Kenneth Jernigan Leadership and Service Program, a leadership development program that will shape you into a powerful advocate, foster your growth, and contribute to the building of the movement. The National Federation of the Blind, NFB, invites you to apply for the next cohort of our Kenneth Jernigan Leadership and Service Program, KJLSP. Prepare to embark on a transformative journey that will shape you into a powerful advocate for blind individuals, foster your personal growth, and contribute to the continued building of the organized blind movement. All Federation members are invited to consider making the commitment to a leadership journey that will make a difference to you and to other blind people. Please carefully review the program details, expectations, and preliminary steps before submitting a program application. The deadline for applying is Sunday, May 31, 2026 at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time. Program highlights. Over the course of 1 year, you will experience a comprehensive training curriculum that blends in-person and virtual learning to provide a holistic leadership development experience. In-person training intensives. Engage in immersive in-person training sessions led by seasoned leaders in the blind community. These intensive workshops will equip you with practical skills, knowledge, and strategies to effectively advocate for the rights and needs of blind individuals. Virtual learning modules. Access a diverse range of virtual modules designed to enhance your leadership capabilities with particular focus on leveraging technology for advocacy, communication, and community building. Explore topics such as public speaking, strategic planning, coalition building, and more. Mentorship and networking. Benefit from mentorship opportunities with experienced leaders from National Federation of the Blind, who will provide guidance, support, and insights throughout your journey. Additionally, you will have the chance to connect with fellow program participants, building a network of like-minded individuals passionate about the blind community. Real-world projects. Apply your newfound skills through hands-on leadership experiences within the National Federation of the Blind. Contribute to ongoing initiatives, collaborate with existing leaders, and make a tangible impact on the lives of blind individuals. Personal growth and empowerment. Our program places great emphasis on personal growth, fostering self-confidence, resilience, and effective communication skills. Develop a strong sense of empowerment and self-advocacy that will serve you in all aspects of your life. Eligibility and commitments. This is a unique and intense leadership training opportunity specifically tailored for blind people who aspire to become leaders within the organized blind movement. Interested individuals should meet the following criteria. Be a current active member of the National Federation of the Blind. Have a fundamental understanding of the National Federation of the Blind. This program is not an introductory course of study. Have attended at least one FB national convention. Have attended one or more state affiliate conventions. Ideally, serve or have served in an elected position in a chapter, affiliate, or division, or have demonstrated experience leading federation committees or other appointed positions. Commit to participate in the following three in-person sessions, travel and lodging provided. Program kickoff, September 17th to 2026, NFB, Jernigan Institute, Baltimore, Maryland. Leadership Seminar and Washington Seminar, Saturday through Sunday, January 30 through 31, 2027, at the NFB Jernigan Institute in Baltimore, Maryland, and Monday through Thursday, February 1 through 4, 2027, at the Washington Plaza Hotel, Washington, D.C. NFB National Convention, July 1 through 8, 2027, JW Marriott in Austin, Texas. Commit to participate in 9 monthly virtual sessions. Computer and internet access required. Complete assignments between sessions and provide feedback through surveys. How to apply. In order to apply, interested individuals should, number one, review the sample program application form in order to gather all of the required information prior to completing the online form. The online application form cannot be saved, therefore it must be completed all at once. We recommend cutting and pasting any open-ended answers. Download the text page of the program application in Microsoft Word to assist in your preparation. There's a hot link for that. Number two, prepare your responses to the application questions, giving careful consideration to your statement of leadership aspiration. Number three, contact and secure the commitment of two NFB state affiliate presidents to serve as your sponsor slash mentor for the program prior to submitting your online application. Potential sponsors may wish to interview you, so please allow time for that. Please note that affiliate presidents are only permitted to sponsor two candidates each year, so you should start building those relationships early. Complete contact information for NFB affiliate presidents can be found on our state affiliate webpage hot link. Number four, complete the KJLSB online program application at the hot link. Number five, you will receive a confirmation page and confirmation email upon successfully completing your application. Number six, please note that the NFB state affiliate presidents who are listed as sponsoring you on your application will be contacted after applications closed to verify and share additional information as part of the selection process. There will be nothing you need to do after completing the application, although we recommend you stay in contact with your sponsors. From ACB.org, urge Congress to oppose the Access Act of 2026, posted May 6, 2026. Congress is considering a bill which would amend the Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA. This is a notice and cure bill which takes away a disabled person's right to sue a business for noncompliance with the ADA, unless that person first provides detailed written notice of the ADA violation, waits 60 days for the business to provide a written description of how they plan to address or cure the violation, and then waits another 60 days for substantial progress to be made in addressing that violation. That means there could be at least 120 days before a business makes itself accessible, or a person with a disability gains the right to sue for noncompliance. The Access Act would weaken the enforcement of the ADA, and businesses would not have incentive to make their buildings and websites accessible until they receive notice. To encourage your Congress member to oppose the Access Act, you can access the Speak Number 4 campaign here at the Hot Link, https://speak4.app/lp/rt01psna query ts=1777908806. The boilerplate provided at that website states, "Dear lawmaker, I urge you to oppose the Access Act of 2026, House Resolution 8396. This legislation would amend Title III of the Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA, to require people with disabilities to notify businesses of ADA violations in writing and give businesses 60 days to provide a written plan for addressing the violation, followed by another 60 days to fix the issue or make substantial progress toward fixing it. This 120-day period would make it significantly more difficult for people with disabilities to access these businesses when needed. By providing businesses with at least a 120-day window to comply, the bill reduces incentives to provide accommodations until businesses receive specific, detailed notice, which creates additional barriers and reduces accessibility. I strongly urge you to oppose this bill. Thank you for your time and consideration. Sincerely, whatever, you know, constituent you are, and addressed to the representative or senator of that district. Also at acb.org, notice of House and Human Services interim final rule publication on May 11th, 2026. We have received notice that on Monday, May 11, 2026, the Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, plans to publish an interim final rule, IFR, regarding the Section 504 rules under the Rehabilitation Act of 1973. The Section 504 rules of the Rehab Act apply to entities which receive federal financial assistance from HHS, including hospitals, clinics, child welfare organizations, and social service providers. Similar to the IFR recently published by the Department of Justice, the IFR from HHS extends the compliance deadlines for the implementation of technical requirements for accessible web content and mobile applications. Originally, recipients of HHS funds with 15 or more employees had until May 11, 2026 to make their web content and mobile applications accessible to people with disabilities by complying with Web Content Accessibility Guidelines version 2.1 level AA. Recipients with fewer than 15 employees had until May 10, 2027 to comply. According to the unpublished IFR, the compliance date for recipients with 15 or more employees will be extended to May 11, 2027. The compliance date for recipients with fewer than 15 employees will be extended to May 10, 2028. This IFR goes into effect on the date of publication, which is likely May 11, 2026. Once published, the public may provide comments regarding the IFR until July 6, 2026. Although this IFR only extends the dates of compliance, the HHS states that in the future they will be considering substantive changes to the regulations which implement Section 504 of the Rehab Act. However, we do not yet know what these substantive changes may be. We will share as more information is available. ACB strongly opposes this delay. Extending these deadlines denies timely access to essential health care services and information, forcing people with disabilities to wait even longer for rights that should already be guaranteed. The importance of accessibility in health care, including websites, apps, and online forms, cannot be overstated for the blind and low vision community. Under this IFR, the progress made 2 years ago with the 2024 final rule, which followed approximately 14 years of dedicated consideration and public comment, has been postponed. People with disabilities deserve equal access to every aspect of public life, including the web content and mobile applications of entities which receive funding from HHS. ACB will be submitting formal comments in opposition to this IFR once it has been published. We encourage members and other advocates to also submit comments during the public comment period and call on the Department of Health and Human Services to reverse this decision. Although the rule is not yet published and therefore technically could be withdrawn before publication, an unpublished version is available for download on the Federal Register. The page on the Federal Register is linked at https://www.federalregister.gov/public-inspections/2026-9266/non-discrimination-on-the-basis-of-disability-accessibility-of-web-content-and-mobile-applications-of, and there probably continues, but that's all they published. The PDF document of the unpublished rule is linked at https://public-inspection.federalregister.gov/2026-09266.pdf. From disabilitierightsnc.org, Leandro and its significance for people with disabilities and advocates, posted April 20th, 2026. What was the Supreme Court's ruling on Leandro? The North Carolina Supreme Court, in a 4-3 judgment, dismissed the Leandro case, that's spelled L-E-A-N-D-R-O, and scrapped efforts to compel the state to fund a multi-billion-dollar remedial plan to improve schools. The plan included proposals to raise teacher pay and increase recruitment, implement a funding system that prioritizes schools with greater need, and provide more support to low-performing schools. Decades-long litigation has established that North Carolina needs to provide all its students with sound basic education. However, with this ruling, the court passes the responsibility back to the legislature and leaves open the question of when the judiciary will step in to enforce constitutional rights in the absence of legislative action. why it was dismissed. The case was dismissed based on a technical rationale from the court majority. The original complaint related only to a handful of school districts and was never amended to be a statewide comprehensive complaint. The dissent disputed the accuracy of the majority's position. While framed in procedural terms, the dismissal of this case leaves substantive concerns about unequal access to education unaddressed, raising the concern that the court declined to address issues of profound social and constitutional significance. Why is this significant for people with disabilities and their advocates? It risks deepening inequalities for students from marginalized communities, including students with disabilities, who are disproportionately impacted by under-resourced schools. For students with disabilities, inadequate funding means fewer services, reduced supports, and barriers to accessing education on equal terms. Without adequate funding that ensures access, sound basic education, guaranteed by North Carolina, threatens to become an empty promise. It also shapes future advocacy strategies, including how education rights claims may need to be framed and pursued going forward. While this ruling emphasizes the role of the legislature, it does not account for the lack of comprehensive remedial measures from the legislature, or resolve the broader legal debate about when courts can require the GA to spend funds or uphold constitutional rights. On a lighter note, from fightingblindness.org, a beacon story. Seen at last, how Love is Blind gave Madison a platform for retinitis pigmentosa. The irony is not lost on Madison Maidenberg. When the Castle Rock, Colorado native joined the cast of Love is Blind Season 9, she became the first contestant living with a blinding disease. By sharing her story with millions worldwide, she brought visibility to retinitis pigmentosa, a condition many had never heard of, and challenged long-held misconceptions about what it means to be blind. In doing so, she became an unexpected yet powerful voice for the blind and low-vision community. "I wouldn't say Love is Blind used it as a headline," says Madison. "I would say it was my why. And it just so happened that it became a headline because, wow, there's actually a blind person on Love is Blind." The show's premise, strangers falling in love without ever seeing each other, gave her story a resonance that no producer could have scripted. But long before the cameras, before the conversations, and before the advocacy, Madison was quietly navigating a world she couldn't fully see. From around age 13, Madison saw what she described as TV static layered over her vision, a constant filter she couldn't explain or turn off. Her eye doctor reassured her that everything seemed normal, and it was likely ocular migraines. But the disconnect between what she was experiencing and what others seemed to see became harder to ignore. She missed steps in dim lighting, ran into objects, and occasionally found herself in confusing and sometimes embarrassing situations. On her 20th birthday, she fell down a set of stairs at a club before she'd even had a drink. Security assumed she was intoxicated and asked her to leave. "That kind of thing happened more than once," says Madison. "I started realizing people were seeing things that I wasn't." At 21, after switching eye doctors, Madison finally got an answer. A new doctor noticed specks on her retinal scan and referred her to a specialist. Colorado Retina gave her the diagnosis of retinitis pigmentosa, RP. But it didn't fully sink in at first. "It was like I dissociated," Madison recalls. "In my mind, it wasn't happening to me. I was listening to the doctor saying, 'This is a blinding disease, that I'm going to lose my vision,' but it didn't feel real." For months, she lived in a state of shock and denial. She told her family and close friends, but avoided talking about it beyond that. Asking for help felt like admitting she was different, and at the time, that was something she wasn't ready to accept. "I honestly didn't want to stand out," says Madison. "I didn't want to be seen differently." Today, Madison describes her vision as looking through a narrowing pair of binoculars, layered with that same TV static. In low light, those binoculars close in further. She might be looking directly at your face and completely miss your outstretched hand. "I can't tell you how many times I've heard, 'Don't leave me hanging,'" says Madison. "I came off as socially rude because someone tries to shake my hand and I just don't see it. And I have to explain, 'Give me an audio cue. Touch my arm. Let me know you're there.'" While Madison navigates challenges in low light and peripheral vision, she is still able to drive and maintain her independence. something she values deeply. Something people need to understand is that blindness is a spectrum, says Madison. I know people with RP who are younger than me who have never driven. I know people older than me who can still see perfectly. My RP is going to be different from his RP, from her RP. It's so different, all in between. Driving represents more than convenience to Madison. It represents freedom. While she's adapted her habits, limiting night driving and relying heavily on navigation apps, she remains committed to maintaining her independence for as long as possible. I will fight, claw, and scratch to maintain my independence, my freedom, who I am, says Madison. For years, Madison navigated RP largely on her own. No one else in her family had the condition, and she didn't know anyone in the blind or low vision community. That changed when she found the Foundation Fighting Blindness. Reaching out to her local Colorado chapter was a turning point. For the first time, she connected with somebody who truly understood. A conversation with another woman living with RP turned into hours of shared stories about the small everyday moments that only someone with vision loss could relate to. It was the first time I felt understood, says Madison. Finding that community within the foundation was so pivotal. It made me feel hopeful that I could live a full life with this diagnosis. That sense of connection sparked something bigger. When the opportunity to join Love is Blind came, Madison didn't initially plan to center her diagnosis in her story. She had always been intentional about not letting RP define her. But once she chose to share it on camera with hosts Nick and Vanessa Lachey and millions watching, something shifted. It was the first time I really stood in my truth, says Madison. The response was immediate and deeply personal. Messages poured in from people who saw themselves or heard their loved ones in her story. Parents reached out to share videos of children newly diagnosed with RP who felt seen for the first time. That's when I realized there was a silver lining, says Madison. Doing the show and talking about my eye disease so freely blew open the door to normalize these conditions. It opened the floor for conversation and to show people this isn't just a hopeless diagnosis. For Madison, Love is Blind didn't create her advocacy. It amplified it, giving work she was already doing a global stage. Now Madison is president of the Foundation Fighting Blindness Colorado chapter, a brand ambassador for the foundation, and serves as auction chair for its largest annual golf fundraiser, Scramble for Sight. It's work that's deeply personal. The foundation is actively advancing research toward treatments and cures for retinitis pigmentosa and other blinding diseases, a mission that hits close to home. She speaks openly about accessibility, the day-to-day realities of vision loss, and the full spectrum of what blindness actually looks like. I feel like I can be a voice for more than just me, says Madison. If sharing my story helps someone else feel less alone, it's worth it. She's also helping shift the narrative, showing that blindness doesn't mean the end of independence, ambition, or identity. It simply looks different. And having once felt alone in her own vision loss journey, Madison is passionate about reaching those newly diagnosed. Don't let this define you, says Madison. Use your voice. Tell your story. The more you accept yourself, the more the world will too. From falling downstairs and picking herself back up, to advocating on a global stage, Madison is proving that vision loss does not mean losing sight of who you are or what you're capable of achieving. Posted May 7th on Assistive Technology Community for the Blind and Visually Impaired Facebook group by Antonio Guimaraes, that's Guimaraes. I've been a little more willing to look at and shake proverbial trees lately, so here's a big sequoia. I've been discussing the high cost of AIRA service, A-I-R-A, around $2.30 minimum per minute after comprehensive review of all their plans on my part. I've mentioned in their WhatsApp channel that people should consider hiring their own friends, acquaintances, or family capable of doing similar work. They perform the same tasks, and you pay them less than half. This helps customers pay less for the same service and put something in a friend or acquaintance's pocket. Coffee change or more, depending on the workload. Now consider this alternative. Time, etc., or other similar services offer virtual assistant support starting at $36 per hour or 60 cents per minute. This is at rates at least four times cheaper than AIRA At full-time rates, that's approximately $5,760 monthly, or $69,120 annually. Aligning with market rates for experienced executive assistants, but you don't need full-time. Task-based on-demand assistants define the work, grant access, wait for completion, offers real savings compared to paying for dedicated hours, whether used or not. Predefined workflows may take you 15 seconds to request and someone 15 minutes to complete. That's exponential time savings if the task is predefined and you can't access the information in the moment. Request it an hour later. It's there for you. You barely did anything but set up the task, which may take a couple hours initially, but now it's modular and repeatable. Literally, it pays for itself after the eighth time you perform this predefined task. However, you'll want to vet the company and their hiring process carefully. Virtual assistants may have access to personal and small business files, sensitive data that requires careful handling. Alternatively, services like TeamViewer let assistants work alongside you without separate logins. You direct and monitor as they assist and navigate. Ensure the setup works seamlessly for your needs. The price gap between Era and financially accessible alternatives is substantial enough to reshape how people think about professional assistance. I've done some legwork here. I started pulling on this thread, and now you can continue pulling it for your own use. This is actionable information. I've researched it and composed this message with heavy use of Claude's help in both editing and searching the web for information gathering. It'll be up to you to verify and use it, and come here if you want to set my record straight. I'm at least telling you how I found this, and I'm willing to correct if the information isn't right. I've been working with Claude for a couple of months now, and I'm posting this at my own risk, admitting up front that I used AI tools to gather this information. It's after 9 p.m. in my time zone, and I could verify pricing by morning call, but I'm posting now. If I'm wrong, that's on me. That said, this information can't be that far off. At the very least, the concept holds. Era was great and the pricing was good for them 10 years ago. A lot has changed. This is informed consent at its best. Except maybe most of us have been doing the consent part really well, but not the informed one. I've only recently become aware of the magnitude of the pricing difference between Era, which does visual interpreting really well, versus mainstream virtual assistant services built for high-powered people at corresponding prices, except those services cost around 30% of what we're paying for Era. I believe we can get more for less, and if some of the information isn't right, that's on me. You do what you do the way you can do it. You can choose to use a remote personal assistant 100% of the time, Era 100% of the time, or somewhere in between. You decide. I'm running out of time, but here's another post from Tony Gebhard, G-E-B-H-A-R-D, also on the Assistive Technology Group. New App Alert, and it's free. Y'all, I built a thing. It's called Describe-E, D-E-S-C-R-I-B-E-E, and it's now open for testing on macOS. We have run out of time for this week's episode of Vision News. We hope you enjoyed listening. Please join us next week. I'm Doris Hyde reading for the next North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Vision News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. I hope you called your mommy on Sunday.